Attention, GrowCast listeners, I've got some exciting news. You can get some free pest management products. That's right. Dr. Zymes is giving away their amazing Dr. Zymes Eliminator to GrowCast listeners while supplies last. I did this episode with Mary Beth Sanchez. She was incredible. She works with the Dr. Zymes team. They are incredible. And they said, let me give away some pest control products to your listeners. So all you got to do is go to growcastpodcast.com/Zymes. That's growcastpodcast.com/ZYMES. growcastpodcast.com/Zymes. Go sign up and get yourself some free pest eliminator solution and also a Dr. Zymes wizard pin. So they're being really generous here, guys. Go get it while supplies last. Really excited for today's episode. Like I said, honestly, this is one of my favorite episodes I've ever done. Mary Beth was awesome, and I'm really excited to share it with you guys. Before we get started, let's give a little love to today's sponsor, Sohum Soils, everybody. Just go to sohumsoils.com. Promo code GROWCAST10 gets you 10% off just for listening to this show. And mygrowpass.com members, our membership program, they get 20% off all Sohum Soils. Sohum Soils were created to take the thinking out of growing and make growing clean quality cannabis easy. With all the liquid fertilizer on the market, consumers can be afraid to try and be a chemist when mixing nutrients. Well, no need for that with Sohum Soils. This is the organic super soil, guys. Just add plain water. You don't even need to pH it. That's it. Just set it and forget it. They've got a super useful chart that shows you the proper size container to make sure you get enough food for the plant through the full flower cycle just with adding water. Sohum Soil is designed with beneficial bacteria and fungus as well, and all the micro and macronutrients that your plant needs. Just set it and forget it. It's that easy. Sohumsoils.com. GrowCast10 is the promo code for 10% off. And when you're ready to save 20% on all Sohum Soils, you can go to mygrowpass.com and join up. All right, everybody. I'm just excited to jump into this episode. So let's do it. Enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, can you please tell a friend about the show? Please share the show with a grower. We really appreciate that. And make sure you're subscribed to The Homegrown Helpers, producer Rob Smith's show, and my new show, The Coffee Health and Science Podcast. Really cool stuff going on there. Really cool stuff going down right now. We have Mary Beth Sanchez on the line. I'm so excited to speak with her. How you doing, Mary Beth?
I'm pretty good this morning. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Your guest sheet is so in-depth. I have so much that I want to talk to you about. But cool. First, let's start with your work. Let's talk about your garden supply store, Growing Wild Garden Supply.
Yeah, we're out in the middle of nowhere in the woods.
So Northern California. What is that? Hayfork? Up in Hayfork?
Yeah. And we have a very beautiful woods out here and a really high population of cannabis growers for some reason really attracted to this place, and that's probably 95% of our store customer base. But we do have a few just traditional gardeners that also
right.
come in, and they still want good advice, they still want good plants.
Nice.
Yeah, we are well-rounded.
Well, it seems that your credentials are pretty well-rounded. I mean, you grew up on a farm, right? You've been farming basically your entire life.
Yes, I am a farmer's daughter. We go from farming way back. And, you know, my grandparents, on one side was a horticultural chemist, and the other side was just a commercial farmer from way back. So it's kind of always been in the blood, always the gardening, and always, you know, thinking I had to do something with plants. I get along with plants better than with most humans, so you know how that is.
Well, you seem lovely to me, but that begs some questions, because I know you're really, really passionate about organic growing and organic practices. Now, were you raised like that, or is that something you came upon to later?
That's something I had to come on my own, yeah, because, we were raised in the post-World War II traditional farming, you know, practices mm-hmm. of old, the coated seeds and the regular sprayings of whatever. But it's only gotten worse over the years now. But ever since I was young, my mother was always into kind of being a health food fanatic, and my older sister. So I started also studying healthier practices of various things. So, of course, you get into organics, and of course, you get into organic farming and gardening.
Nice.
And how much better those practices are than the old, good old-fashioned ways that really aren't the good old-fashioned.
Exactly.
Really just post-World War II. You
know? Yeah,
the really old-fashioned ways, Mother Nature, you know, before humans came along, did not need our help.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
100%. I want to talk to you about that. I want to talk to you about some soil science. Why don't we start with compost tea? I know you're a big fan of it.
Yes.
What can you tell us about compost tea? I know you work on your own. Is that like a product that that you're looking to sell, like a compost tea mix, or is that just something you're brewing up at home?
Yeah, I just do this for work. I manage the nursery at the grow store, and I just take care of the plants there, and I want them to be the healthiest, happiest they can possibly be. And that requires them to be compost tea all the time.
Nice.
Especially little tiny plants in little tiny pots, you know, sitting in the hot sun, baking, and, you know, they really need all the help you can give them. And so we brew our own tea there just for, we make our own compost, brew our own tea for our plants there.
Nice.
At the downtown store, we actually have two outlets in town because some people don't want to travel across town. You know, we're all, we're very
doubling down
in
Hayford.
The hills, I'm telling you. We're laid back. Yeah, the people at one end of the town don't want to cross to the other side. So we actually have two outlets in town. But at the one outlet, we do make tea for sale for customers. And we do sell them a quality tea that I can have a microscope so I can see my teas. I can see soil samples. And we do this at the store as well for free for
nice.
Customers. If they bring in samples of their compost tea or their compost and they want me to look at it and assess their biology, I can tell them a lot about, you know, what they've got in there and what they need to do to improve, or, you know, give them a gold star when they've got the awesome stuff. And they're as happy as I am.
That's great. Can we talk about that for a second? Maybe you could just, I know it's kind of a lot to cram down, but give a crash course in making good quality, well-rounded compost tea.
Oh, see, that's the cool part, is that a really, really good tea is really, really easy, because most people want to overthink it and overdo it and think, well, if I add about a half a dozen more ingredients, won't it be better? And
right.
The answer is no.
So the variety isn't everything.
You can make a really, exactly. The main thing is that you want good compost to start with. And if you don't have good biology in there, it's never going to be great. And you only know you have good compost if you've got that microscope. Take a look and see what's in there. But your basic compost recipe is so simple. Basically, suppose you have a 15-gallon tank like I do. Okay, I get one of those beautiful 400 mesh, I believe it is. It's kind of like a paint sprayer bag, the kind that you would strain your paint in to get any particles out before you go spray. Okay, so you want, I think, a 400 mesh bag. We got good bags from, what's that, Biologique, that company that's popular out there for lots of stuff like that. But anyway, you put your compost in there, and I like to use more than one kind of compost. I like to use worm compost along with my own homemade compost, along with you know, Alaska humus or ancient forest.
Sure.
About that, I like to add some of that to it for just some additional biology. And if whatever kind of lovely compost samples have come to the store, we get reps leaving the samples all the time. So I always like to try them out and see what's in them and see how the stuff responds. So I figured the more diversity, the better. But basically, that's it. You also, as you're putting your water in, you know, hopefully you don't have chlorinated water. If you do, you've got to let it sit around a while and gas off. But if you don't have chlorinated water, you want to add some humic acid and some soluble seaweed powder to the water. Mm-hmm. Before it starts. And for humic acid, I totally am fanatical about no derived from leonardite sources. They cannot be derived from leonardite sources. And that's the problem, is you'll notice on labels, they're almost always derived from leonardite. And you've got to try really hard to find ones that aren't. And the Anasazi brand is one that is not. It is sourced from lake beds. It is not sourced from coal tar. Like leonardite is sourced from coal tar, and it is denatured, and it is useless for 6 months after application. You can't get any benefit from it until 6 months after it's been in the soil, because it takes that long to renature it after the processes that they use to extract it from the leonardite. And so I never, ever recommend. Leonardite is a cheap way to get humic acid, but it's a bad way to get humic acid. The best way to get humic acid is either to strain it yourself out of your own humus from your own compost. That's ideally the best. If you don't have that, though, get the Anasazi. I don't know if you're familiar with that brand.
I am now.
It comes in liquid, and it comes in powder. It comes in a super fine soluble form that you can use in your water systems, along with a more granular form that's good for adding to your compost pile or to your soil mix.
That's like wonderful.
Our downtown store, we have chloramine in the water.
I was just going to say, I've heard of the more stable chloramine being used by new municipalities and humic acid counteracting those effects. Do you find that to be the case?
Exactly, yeah, because the store puts a lot of that in our soil because we put compost tea out on the soil there. And so our plants are still doing really, really well. Whereas a lot of people who live in town will come to the store and ask me, what is wrong with my plant? Why can't I keep anything alive out there? And I'll ask them,
it's the chloramine?
Town, you've got the chloramine.
Whoa.
Yeah, chloramine. And when I recommend to them to just put the humic acid in the water, everything's going to be all right. And lo and behold.
That is so fascinating.
Humic acid in the water. Yeah, it only takes one drop per gallon, literally, to tie up and chelate those minerals. And once they're chelated, the plant will not take them up unless it wants them. And I don't know any plants that want that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But basically, you get those good ingredients, throw them in your bag, you aerate it really briskly in the water for, I like to do overnight. They say take it out after 8 hours, but that they're just being protective. I've left it in there much longer than 8 hours, sometimes for days, and it still hasn't gone anaerobic. And I know because I have the microscope, so I can always check. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. If you can check, you don't have to wonder, is my tea good or bad? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it has foam and sometimes it doesn't, and people will judge the goodness of the tea by the foam, and really the foam has zero to do with what biology is in there.
Oh, wow.
How beneficial it is. Yeah.
Yeah, you're just
not recommend,
you're dropping
molasses.
Science. I love this. You don't recommend molasses? Why is that?
No, and the only case where we would use molasses is if you have a really big brewer, like 250 gallon or something, where you really need a lot of biology in that water and you don't want to use a ridiculous amount of compost to get it. The molasses tends to favor the unhappy pathogenic biology a little bit.
Oh, wow.
In a smaller brewer, but in the big brewers, it's just great. It'll add that extra food for your bacteria so that you will fill up your water with lovely beneficial things and not a bunch of pathogens without having to put in, you know, 100 gallons of compost in bags. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Big brewers just get to be bigger, bigger work to do, more bags. So,
sure.
And that's another thing. If you're brewing in a big brewer, you don't want one big bag. You want a lot of little bags because you want that water to be able to penetrate all the way through the bag. You don't want a bag stuffed so full that the water's not flowing and the center of the compost isn't even getting wet. People have told me that they've fully filled their bags and taken them out after they brewed and found the inside still dry.
Oh, wow.
Yes, yes. So never fill your compost tea bag more than like a halfway or three quarters. Really, really stuffing it, but halfway is good.
Man, this is great.
You want the airflow like the tea bag. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
But you should get really live tea then. And if you're lucky like me and you got a microscope, you go check your tea afterwards and you see how many happy critters are there. And if you think you need more, you know, like at certain times of the year, you want more fungus. So then you add more things that are called fungal foods, such as oats. Oh, you want everything, excuse me, a ground up superfine. If you're putting in oats, baby oats are good because they're already ground up super fine. Otherwise, you got to grind your oats up super fine. Or things like the insect frass or the fish hydrolysate, you can add a little bit of that if you want it to get a little more fungal. But those things tend to go nasty really quickly, so you don't want to add them and leave them in the water a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You usually would add those just shortly before you would put your compost tea out into the wide, wide world.
So
and if
cool.
you're fanatical about getting extra nutrients out of your tea, like perhaps where I work in the nursery, I have all these little six packs and tiny plants that come to me from wholesale growers that, you know, you sell your annual flowers and things, and they can't have very many nutrients held in those teeny tiny little pots that they're living in. So, of course, I'm adding teeny tiny bits of organic, strictly organic fertilizers. And I'm really particular about the ingredients in my strictly organic fertilizers. I will not tolerate certain ingredients if they're not biologically friendly.
Mm-hmm.
They're
mm-hmm.
not allowed. And so it takes such a tiny amount. You use 1/10 of what you would normally use as a maximum amount of fertilizer that you would add to this, and you'd let the biology take it up into their body so that it's out there for the plants when they want it, and yet it's not being leached out to the soil.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, when the biology is holding all that nutrient in its body, you can be leaching water out, but you won't be leaching the biology that's holding the nutrients, so you won't be contaminating the soil and the creeks nearby, and et cetera, et cetera.
It's fascinating.
Because the bacteria and the fungi just are really good at holding on to the soil. So as soon as they hit it, they're hanging on, and they've got that nutrient already in their body. They've taken it up. So even though the water's flowing through, the nutrient isn't. Do you know what I'm saying?
Just the wonderful benefits of super soil microbial based growing.
Exactly. Yeah. You were talking on, I was listening to some of your other podcasts and talking about the super soil. I'm like, whoa, I've never heard of this. And I see, oh, I see. This is just live soil, really good live soil.
Right. That's the cannabis grower term that would be thrown around. Now, I have some, I have some questions. Sure. You know, listeners to this show are at least basically familiar with organic growing practices and, you know, that your traditional bottled big brand nutrients are going to harm that.
Right.
I want to ask you about some other products and get your opinion because you seem, I just want to get your take on this. Okay. So first of all, what do you think about those compost tea mixes, like the mix your own ones? Better than nothing, but not as good as the stuff you brew yourself, or should people not waste their time?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, some things, you know, if it comes in a plastic bottle, I'm always suspect how well it can survive in a plastic bottle like that. But I, you know, they have some value, but they have a really limited number of microbes. And so, you know, you sure add them along with whatever else you're doing. It can't hurt. It might help. But one that I've noticed that I've actually tried and looked at under the microscope that was more impressive than I thought it would be was, I think it's a booze blend instant compost thing where you just kind of toss those bags in the water, aerate them for 8 hours, and go ahead and put it out.
Uh-huh.
I think you dilute it 10 times with water, you know, per parts per 10 times. And it actually was a pretty good looking biology in there.
Okay. So maybe they're getting better.
Yeah. You know, and any biology that you put out is going to improve things, good or bad. Even the bad biology is going to improve things if your soil is like concrete. But if you've got a halfway decent soil, you know, there's a point where you don't really need to keep adding things. And if you've got a really, really good soil that's been really built up with good compost and compost tea over the years, you really don't need to add anything anymore, not even the compost and compost tea. It's like self-generating after a certain point.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Well, up here in the woods, we have soil that's basically clay and rocks, clay and rocks, clay and rocks. And so we really have a hard time regenerating it into soil that when you walk on, there's some spring in your foot, you know what I mean? But yet we've been able to do that at the nursery and at my home to a great degree. Soil that I used to be, I'd have to weed it with a pickaxe. Now I can just reach down with two fingers and pull the weeds, and they come right up. And I have so much fewer weeds, and I have so much what I call the better class of weeds. They're less noxious and more just almost like a nice ground cover kind of thing. It
Man,
really makes
cool.
a difference. The succession of plant life, the way it goes on, the first thing that comes up are the worst of the weeds because they grow the fastest and they just want to cover the soil. The earth does not want herself exposed. She wants to be covered. She's like a Muslim woman. She does not want a fragment of skin exposed. So she puts out those weeds, and boy, they cover the earth quickly. But they don't do it a whole lot of good nutrient-wise. But it's first succession. They lay down at least some organic matter for the next succession to come, or the better classes.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually you get to the point where you're in the grasslands and the bushlands and the forest lands and the old growth forest land where you get the really ideal soil. There are no weeds because the fungus is so strong it outcompetes all the weeds for the phosphorus available.
Wow.
And the fungus is your best friend in the soil because it will mine nutrients from crappy soil that has no available plant available nutrients. It will mine it and make it plant available.
Well, and
so
that's what
don't trust your trust your soil test.
That segues nicely into my next question. You know, I loved speaking with Colin Bell from Mammoth Microbes, and basically his product would be great for that application on all these farms that have really torched their soil. What do you think of Mammoth Microbes, though? I've also heard some pushback from some really, really natural guys that don't like that stuff, just, you know, basically because it comes in a bottle or, you know, quote, made in a lab or whatever.
No, I don't think so, because if it's got any good biology, it's better than nothing. And it might be just the organisms you were missing. The thing is, you know, there are like 70,000 different bacteria and God knows how many funguses. And, you know, in a perfect soil, you'd have them all. And in those bottles, they can only give you so much, but it might be the thing that you're missing.
Mm.
So go ahead and put it out there. Why not? It's good to get all the diversity that you can get if you want a good soil, you need all the organisms. You need the good and the bad, and they will balance each other out.
Love it.
They will. You'll get health without having to add a bunch of stuff. It takes some time. You have to have the patience, and you have to really stick to it. But, you know, even the Ruth Stout method, I don't know if you've heard of that, but it's
I've not.
It's
please,
basically
can you elaborate?
Composting. Yes. She basically started by doing conventional gardening, and one day she said, I'm going to try something different because the plowman was late showing up. So she started just putting straw or hay out in thick layers, started about 8 inches thick or so, and just let that sit out on the ground over winter. And then in spring, when she wanted to plant, she would just pull back the place where she wanted to plant. She'd pull back the straw, dig a hole right there, put her plant in, put the straw back up, all but touching the stem of the plant, because you don't really want the straw touching the stem of the plant, but mm-hmm. you know, you keep it an inch or so back. And that's it. She didn't weed, she didn't water, she didn't do anything but plant and harvest.
Wow.
Because the composting straw is feeding the microbes in the soil. So she's getting good soil, she's getting good biology, constantly recycling. And all she does is add more straw. As the years go by, she just adds more straw. And the more rotted, the better. You want the stuff that got rained on that you can get cheap from, you know, the people who bought it for their feed. Mm-hmm. And excuse me, lay down the straw, and it's decomposing. It's doing all the work for you. So that's like the world's laziest composting method, but it works.
I love it.
An 80-year-old woman, and she said, "I am too old to be dragging hoses around." And she could show you pictures of her garden, and she's got mammoth produce everywhere. She didn't ever have to pick weeds. She just had to spread straw or hay, whichever, you know. She would just kind of loosen up the chunks and just toss it around. And just so long as you had plenty of that, you never had weeds. And you attract all kinds of different biology that all balances each other out. She didn't have diseased plants. And people would say, how do you do it? She wrote books and books. So if you ever hear Ruth Stout, you know, she's a really good method for easy soil improving. And
Ruth
sheep
Stout.
Composting. I don't know if you've heard of sheep composting.
No,
but it's
please.
Kind of like making lasagna on your soil. It's a kind of similar thing, but you're piling cardboard and you're piling on top of the cardboard, everything, you're wetting it as you go. Okay, so you're piling your cardboard and wetting it. And then on top of that, you put some manure wetting it and some straw and wetting it, and you put in some more cardboard or some paper, newspaper, what have you, and wetting it, and same, and do a few layers like that, and you get a top layer of some kind of humus, compost, mulch, bark, something on top to be the final layer. And you just keep, make sure that it stays moist, and like, it's good to let that sit for a few months before you actually start planting in it, unless you're just doing some little annual, you know, veggies or something. But after a very short time, you start getting fantastic soils. If you start collecting other people's cardboard and paper, that's the ideal way to turn it into soil. It gets thick, good soil quickly. It really attracts the beneficial fungus and bacteria that your soil loves.
Nice. So I had heard of sheep composting. I thought you said sheep composting. That's that's how... It's just such a pleasure to speak with you, because I'm so tuned in and I'm so open because of all the cool stuff you're saying. I legitimately was like, she's going to tell me about sheep composting. Like,
oh God,
I wonder what it has, you know, people, like, so.
There are people who build huge, what they call static piles, and they make it like with big pieces of wood and stuff. And they do put dead animals in there and among the pile and they, for the nitrogen, and they just let it sit until it decomposes. And that's called static composting, but it's
closer,
not as common as the stuff that you would churn and let it get hot.
That's closer to what I was thinking of when I thought you said sheep composting. But no, it is a real pleasure to talk to you.
Yes, you can do
that. This accumulated knowledge is stunning. And I look down and see that we're already 20 minutes into this show, and we haven't even brought up what was supposed to be the topic of the show, which is integrated pest management. So I would love to dig into that before we just drop too much ancillary knowledge. But but seriously,
I can't help myself.
I'm so excited to speak with you, and I know you're working with one of our best partners, Dr. Zymes Pest Eliminator. How did you hook up with those guys?
Well, what's funny is I know I always sound like a commercial for Dr. Zymes. I keep recommending it all the time, but it has so many off-label uses besides that I'm always experimenting with. I know you've spoken with Patrick King, and he's spoken of some off-label uses experimented with. And it's true. I mean, this stuff, I've seen it cure mange on dogs. I'm not kidding
Whoa.
You. But anyway, on the way of how I got involved with Talk Design, so originally the nursery where I work as a manager in the nursery, she used to own that store before she started Dr. Symes, and she sold the store and moved on to just try to sort of retire. And one day they had a house guest with scabies, and the house guest left the scabies for them to appreciate. So suddenly she had scabies, and she was battling scabies, and she was being tortured because the over-the-counter stuff wasn't working, the prescribed stuff wasn't working, the magical remedies online weren't working, and she was going out of her mind, and she discovered the ingredients in the Dr. Symes.
Oh,
and she went,
my
wow,
God.
If this cures my scabies this way, and it feels so good on my skin, it's obviously not toxic to me anyway.
Whoa. So it wasn't like painful or anything?
Yes.
It just,
what would this do for the mites?
Whoa.
So she, being we were still friends because she'd been my former employer, she asked me, would I help her with some beta testing since I'm still working in the nursery? So we started working that way, you know, beta testing. How does this respond to this level of dilution? And how does it respond to that level of dilution? What bugs is it killing and not killing, and you know, and how and why? But we also did sit together and brainstorm and come up with the name. We love the wizard. We're in love with the wizard.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, the wizard is great for sure.
But really, it's hard to not call it amazing because it really is. It's amazing. And I know the thing is, I'm working in the nursery. I get the sales reps from every company coming to the store all the time and leaving their samples and saying, please try this and see how it works. And I always do, of course. I'm always curious. But it's always like, how well do they work compared to Dr. Symes? And in every case, it seems to me to be the choice I would prefer because it doesn't have the attributes the others do. For instance, it never clogs stomata. It has no oil. It doesn't have alcohol. It's not going to stress your plant that way with the alcohol and the oil. It may kill the bugs, but it also is going to stress the plant. It keeps everything super clean. It has no residue. It's not going to ever skip.
Yeah,
it,
or like runoff or anything testing. Weird, right?
When the runoff goes on, it's never a problem. There's nothing toxic going into your water.
Okay.
If the wind changes and it suddenly sprays all over you, you don't have to wear any protective clothing.
Wow.
Literally can garden naked. We love to make jokes about that. Yeah,
good,
in fact, my husband, we call him. Yeah, my husband's he's running naked in the garden all the time. But it's so excellent as a preventative. That, you know, the people that I know that are using it preventatively, and I know a lot of gardeners because I work in the nursery store. They come to me, they bring me their leaves, they say, look at my leaves, please tell me what's wrong with my plant and what should I do. And they appreciate my advice and come back and tell me, yay, it worked and we're all good. But the ones who do preventative maintenance and who are willing to make that, you know, take the leap of faith, they say, I had no problems. Well, all of my neighbors around me were going down with the mites and the et cetera. You know, what usually gets us is either the two-spot mite, the russet mite, or some people indoors with the little red mites. And, oh, geez, we got thrips out here like crazy. You're always, this year, scale and aphid for some reason.
Right.
They usually weren't any problem at all in years past. Now it's suddenly scale and aphid. But we still have all of those others, plenty of them, and we're still preaching Symes above all.
Wow.
We do have the other products on our shelf, but they're never the first thing I recommend. It's like, well, if you insist on buying that, there it is. But, you know, we'd never recommend any really horrible toxic stuff. We don't even carry things like malathion or, you know, those kind of things in the store. We are very firmly believe in organics. And back to my boss, will not put anything on the shelf if I don't pre-approve it, at least as far as testing it in the garden and seeing if it works, or testing the biology and see if they're telling us the truth about what's in there.
Well, then
I would,
absolutely. And I respect that, which means I would love to get your opinion on something. What do you think about azadactrin and neem extracts? I know there was some controversy because there was a testing issue that happened.
Yeah.
And then I believe it got traced to it wasn't the company's fault and it was the mixer's fault and it was too late.
Yeah.
The company had already been out of business because of the bad news. What do you think of azadactrin?
Right.
Does that make the cut for you, and why or why not?
Well, you know, for certain uses, it can be good, but you don't ever want to put stuff like that on your flowers. It won't pass testing in a lot of places if it's got any residue of neem oil. And if you've ever used it, it's very thick and it's very strong smelling. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing you might not want if you're growing flowers for a certain smell or aroma. You might not want those other smells and aromas to be on your flowers.
So maybe okay for veg?
Yeah.
I like the hesitance, which says to me what you were saying earlier, which is why not just go for Dr. Symes?
Yeah, but see, the other thing is neem is famous for not really working on the russet mites unless you add something like abamectin, which is a banned one, to it.
Interesting.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's not that great at doing it. I mean, you can, if you're indoors and you can heat up your greenhouse to 115 degrees, God help you, for like 15 or 20 minutes, you can kill the bugs that way. But that's kind of a hellish torture to me. I can't even imagine trying to get my room up.
Yeah, those always make me skeptical as well. What about what about spinosad?
Well, that's another one that, you know, it has its good and bad qualities. It's a hideous smell. It's just about knock you over, whereas Dr. Symes is very pleasant. Okay. But it's also does not pass testing in all times and places. You definitely can't get it on your flowers in certain states. They won't accept that bacteria on your, like, you don't want to even spray compost tea on your flowers in most places. It won't pass testing because you'll see some fungus, and they won't decide if it's a good or a bad fungus. They'll just say fungus or bacteria.
Oh, for sure.
No.
Good point.
They don't know how to differentiate if it's a beneficial or if it's going to hurt you. They say, well, these people might have a compromised immune system and that thing is going to kill them. So they won't, you know, you don't ever want to spray compost tea on flowering. You want to do it only in the soil during flowering.
Nice. Yeah, I think no spray in flower is a more common technique that I see more and more. Less people saying, oh, this many weeks in or whatever. Now I see a lot of no spray in flower, which I think is...
But with the Dr. Symes, you can spray all over your flowers.
That's crazy.
That are full of caterpillars. If you have buds full of caterpillars, you better be spraying them with Dr. Symes. It will not destroy your flowers, and it will kill those caterpillars, and it will not mold inside of there because it's killing the mold.
That's crazy.
It's like freaking magic. I kid you not. So I see how I sound like a commercial, but really it's because I've used it and I know, and I've compared it to the others because I get them all day long. I get these samples all day long.
Oh, I love it.
I am the one they have to bring them to. And they say, Farrah, would you please try this? Okay. But, you know, to myself, I'm saying, I don't like your chances, but I will. It turns out to be the fact.
Man, really, that's really cool. Oh, it's good to get this info from you, who's literally been doing it for decades. But, you know, I just, it's the first time I heard about this product. I was interested and I was so thrilled when they came on board with GrowPass. And you can get 25% off your Dr. Symes if you join mygrowpass.com, everybody. So that's really cool.
Well, the only thing that I've seen where people will have user error with it sometimes is because they're dealing with a plant that's very, very bushy and branchy and leafy and a lot to spray. And they really have to spray thoroughly. And a lot of people think they're spraying thoroughly, but they're really not giving it that much effort.
Interesting.
Your employees are only as good as they are. And you really have to spray it thoroughly and frequently. And you have to get your dosage accurately. And if you get that once a week preventative spraying, you never have to do the dramatic, takedowns. If you get an infestation and you wait till you see signs of it, you've already got way too many bugs.
Right.
You're going to have a little battle. And they always say at Dr. Symes, and I found that this works, you give it that 1, 2, 3 punch, like 3 days in a row, you kick its ass, you spray it 3 times, once each day for 3 days in a row. And you get that population down to a point where it's next to nothing. And then if you do your weekly sprayings at half that dosage, then you will not have any pests. You will have harvest at the end of the season. And people have told me they've had bugs crawling on their drying branches. They can see little red mites on their drying branches. What do I do? I tell them, guess what? Just like that story that Patrick said about the people with the mold, you can dip it right in the zyme, rehang it to dry. And I kid you not, and it kills them and come out clean, test clean.
That's insane.
It's
skeptical,
really true.
But I can't not believe
We've
it.
We've seen
from
it
the
with
experts.
Our own eyes.
How can I not believe it? I look forward to diving in more. And then I want to say one more thing before we move on to integrated pest management and other pest management strategies as a whole. I wanted to bring up the Dr. Zymes, the way they stress the temperature of the water with which you spray, right?
Well, it's ideally, you want to use warm water. It does work
warm water
that way.
Okay.
Yeah, and like 90 degree water is really nice. Like if you've got a beautiful sprayer, you fill it up and set it in the hot sun for a while, and then add your Zymes and do your spray.
Why is that?
Well, it just does something the way the enzymes work.
Okay.
You know, you're not allowed to really say enzymes because the state of California doesn't know how to quantify enzymes. And so we have to always use words that sound like enzymes, but don't say enzymes because it's a secret. You can't know it.
That's so crazy. This stuff is magic. All this stuff I'm learning about, you know, the regenerative soil science, talking to people like Stephen Reisner and like aquaponic growing, and now this with microbial pest, microbial growing, microbial pest control, enzyme pest control, oil, what is it called? Essential oil pest control. This is all like magic, man. It's crazy.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's fascinating. And I'm so glad it's so, you know, so much better than the conventional agriculture that's out there. Like, oh my God. A woman came to me the other day and she showed me a picture because there was a language barrier. And she said, this is what I'm using. And it was a picture of malathion and plant therapy. And she said, I'm just using a few teaspoons of each. I went, malathion, are you kidding me?
Wow.
Oh my God, I cringe. And you can see on the bottle, it's got pictures of vegetables and things. So you think, oh, it got to be good to eat. You know, like, oh God, no malathion. You know, that's banned on every list for cannabis production. You can't have traces of malathion on your plant. Jesus Christ. But, you know, people just don't know. I mean, these are the things they always used in the old days. Or they'll come up and say, well, I used some Avid or Forbid because I was desperate. Oh, Jesus, why?
Right.
You know, you so just shot yourself in the foot. Mm-hmm. And if only you had used something safe and sane preventatively all the way through, and you know what I'm talking about. One more time, doctor.
Well, it sounds great for a preventative, especially, even if you're, it sounds like an ideal preventative.
It doesn't clog your stomata. The plants stay clean and happy. And when you're bringing things into your new quarantine room, stuff from elsewhere, and you always want to spray the bejesus out of it to be sure that you're starting off with clean material. Well, the first thing that I'll notice is I'll overspray and all the leaves fall off. And I go, what did I do? Well, you just relax, because in about 2 days, all those leaves just start popping out again, all new and green and beautiful and fresh. And you know that you've got good material and everything's going to go all right. And forever after, when you do your weekly sprayings at a low dosage, it's just fine. You don't lose all those leaves every time. The young leaves will go into shock when you overspray them, but it's okay because they come right back.
Whoa.
New leaves come out really, really fast.
So cool,
don't panic. Don't panic if you overspray and the leaves go, whoa. Don't panic because new leaves are coming right away.
Great advice. Okay, before we jump back in with the lovely Mary Beth, let's give a little love to today's sponsor, Sweet Leaf Nutrients, everybody. Just go to sweetleaf.com, sweetleaf.com. Promo code GROWCAST15 saves you 15%. And when you're ready to save 25% on all your Sweet Leaf Nutrients, join mygrowpass.com, our membership program. Sweet Leaf Nutrients, everybody. These are smart nutrients for smart growers made right here in the US of A and sponsored by the legendary cultivator, Danny Danko, everybody. You got to check out sweetleaf.com. It's a great nutrient line. And make sure to check out their awesome CalMag edition. It's an award-winning CalMag supplement. And it really is really high-quality stuff. If you've been thinking about switching CalMags, try Sweetleaf. Growers that use Sweetleaf have also won a bunch of different awards here. First place for best edible, second place for best flower at all these harvest cups. It's great stuff, guys. Sweetleaf.com. Promo code GROWCAST15 for 15% off. And join microbest.com for 25% off. All right, everybody, let's get back to the show. Eye-opening.
Yeah.
This has been a fantastic interview, but we're not done yet. Let's talk IPM here, integrating all these different lines of defenses into our garden. What do you want to rap about, man? I mean, cover crops. Do you use cover crops?
I do believe very strong in cover crops.
Oh, what do you use? What do you recommend? What's good for cannabis?
Well, anything that shades your soil is going to be you know, beneficial to you, and anything that is, I know they have lovely little mixes out there that are kind of like, they've got different seed mixes for, and they have lovely names, something that will grow in summer and winter in it, something that will grow in heat and cold in it. So no matter what's going on environmentally or what time of year it is, your soil is covered.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So, and it's usually little things that are low growing, like clovers and such, but you can use an infinite variety of plants. So like the main thing is you want the soil covered and shaded and cooled, because the heat is such a stressful thing on a plant, especially if you're growing in pots. You know what I mean? People who grow in soil, lucky them, but then they have to deal with things like, you know, Phytophthora or verticillium and, you know, things like that that are much more common in the soil than in the pots with, you know, bagged soil or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a whole different thing to do, but everybody needs mulch, whether they're in the soil or in a pot. You've got to cover your soil with something, and a living something is better because you've got all the biology in there. They love to be with the roots of plants. All that biology we kept talking about only really wants to live near the roots of plants. It doesn't want to just live out in the soil with no plants. So get it in there. Make everybody happy. It does the work for you. But cultural controls are really important. Try to keep keep bugs away from you. Try to keep weeds away. Keep with the doctor's arms. I even spray my weedy perimeters because I know that's where the thrips are hiding, and the little two-spot mites and all those things that are, because I'm out in the woods, the pressures of the pests are really strong out here. So spraying your weedy perimeters will really save you from getting a lot of infestation as well.
Mm-hmm.
You just want to spray around your pots. You want to spray in the soil because a lot of those bugs reproduce. They lay their eggs in the soil, or they're flying around and they let their eggs drop onto the top of your beautiful organic soil where it's nice and moist because you water all the time. And that's what the eggs love too. And so the next thing you know, you're going, fungus gnats, what? Or you know, those flea beetles, or God knows, the various little bugs that'll drive you insane and make
you
like a living.
So you gotta be spraying the whole space.
Yes. Yeah, you do. And if you're going to do mulch and things, you really want to cover stuff. If you really want to break the life cycle of these bugs, you've either got to do it with your spraying of your safe and sane solutions, or you want to actually put a physical barrier for some of them. If you know they're the type that fly through the air and then their eggs just drop on the soil, if you've got a thick layer of sand, hot sand,
whoa,
will immediately dry up those eggs and they don't hatch, but your water goes right through it, so you don't you're still able to water, okay, but that sand dries right away on the top and it acts as a barrier from the eggs of the insects that are flying up above. They don't want to burrow through that sand. It's real annoying to them.
Whoa.
You know what I'm saying? So that's a real good preventive physical measure for things like fungus gnats or flea beetles that and thrips, things like that, that love to fly around in the air but lay their eggs on the top of the soil.
That's great.
A lot.
That's great. What about predatory bugs?
Predatory bugs, I really love them. If you can get them out there early enough, you know, they'll do their job. But the thing is, they need something to feed on. So you've got to have a problem for them to stick around.
Right.
Okay. And you've got to kind of maintain a problem if you want them to stick around, or you've got to constantly be putting them on. So you've got to weigh the cost. Is that cheaper than just going ahead and spraying with designs? So sometimes what I'll do is I'll do alternate between Dr. Symes, like after Dr. Symes, I'll put on some ladybugs. If they'll take care of whatever few little bugs are still left. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because it has to get on their body to affect them, and it won't hurt the ladybug if they just walk over the leaf afterwards. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
The ladybugs are good. They're not going to get harmed because you just sprayed the signs. Unlike if you sprayed, you know, say Avid or Forbid, or use some systemic like Bear, you know, puts out these things that kill the bees. And all. Well, this is another biological that I would only use as last resort, is that Bovaria, like a Botanigard.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Those kind of things, because they will kill the bees. Okay. So if you need it desperately, it's kind of better to use that in a greenhouse or an enclosed environment where you're not going to get it out into nature.
Right.
Because it works really, 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 really well, maybe too well. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's a few products that are a little indiscriminate in their killing, like Trichoderma. I don't universally recommend trichoderma unless you have a problem that nothing else will kill it. Mm-hmm. And then go ahead and do what you got to do, put the trichoderma out. But it's such an indiscriminate killer, it's going to take out a lot of your good biology as well.
Mm-hmm.
Really, unless you have some super good, what I call Glomulus intradeces. It's a different species of fungus which outcompetes it. And if you've got a lot of that in your soil, it's good. You can go ahead and add your trichoderma, and it won't necessarily take over the world.
Yeah,
if you know
right.
what I'm saying. Get overly aggressive.
Right on, right. What do you think of diatomaceous earth? I know that it's pretty effective until it gets wet.
Until it gets wet, yeah. And the other problem with it is that it tends to, you know, be leaving powdery debris everywhere. And you're going, is that powder mildew or is that my diatomaceous? Or is that, you know, sometimes it can be such a mess.
Right.
Do it's not got its good
it,
and bad qualities.
Personally.
And, you know, I've noticed, though, that the bugs don't like to crawl over
it. It works when it's dry. Do you not bother with it, though?
Yeah. There's another neat little organic solution, too, you can use for little things like ants, which also Dr. Times kills the ants, kills them really fast. But if you don't have that or don't want to use it, you can mix, like, I think baking soda with sugar. They are attracted to the sugar, and they don't know the baking soda is in there, and it's going to kill them, and they just eat it, and they just die.
Oh, fascinating.
So it's a thing you can just keep around for your old lady remedies.
I love it. Love
yeah,
the old lady
baking soda
remedies.
And sugar. Baking soda will kill them. The sugar will attract them like little ants.
That's cool.
You know, a lot of little bugs like cockroaches and things you can kill that way, too. But
that's
I noticed
great.
Zymes will kill a lot of bugs that I didn't expect it to kill. I accidentally killed spiders with it. They died right away. I found that the slugs despised it, and the caterpillars just fell off the tree screaming. They hated it as well. I've killed a lot of caterpillars with it. So I know it does do this job. And I have seen the way it works on the bacteria. So here's an interesting experiment I did with a batch of compost tea that had gone bad because the electricity went off.
Whoa.
And I thought about, oh, Jesus, I just
what happens if I add Zymes?
Exactly. I said, what'll it do to my... Because I know it will generally kill the bacteria in there. So I said, well, let's see. If I'm killing the bacteria, then they will release their nutrients and I'll still have fertile water and I won't have to throw away this whole batch of stuff. Okay, so I went ahead and did it and then checked the biology afterward. And lo and behold, it did kill off all the anaerobic bacteria in there. And I just went, wow, that's so cool. And there were still just a very few little beneficial bacteria swimming in there, but hardly any. And then like a day or so later, I looked at it again and the beneficial bacteria population had exploded. Fungus was growing. Things were great. Like it did not persist and annihilate the population in there. And it didn't allow this pack of ciliates, the big ones, weren't back. The anaerobic guys were not coming back. So I was like, yeah. And the plant seemed to respond real well when I put it on. It seemed to like get a little better color and a little happier smile on their face, if you know what I'm saying.
That's so cool.
Yes. So I thought, well, this was an interesting experiment. So I'm thinking that it was kind of acting as the protozoa or as the predator in the food chain for the things that were holding the nutrients. So the plants were still getting those nutrients and I wasn't putrefying the soil by throwing a bunch of anaerobic bacteria out there.
Right.
So yeah, that kind of blew my mind a little bit. You can save your bad batch of compost teas if you need to. Yay.
Man, that's so crazy. Love it though. That's great. As far as IPM goes, that was good. It covered some physical barriers and some cultural controls. Is there anything else you want to add on the IPM front? Just some general tips or any final words? I know. I'll pitch the webinar, but please go ahead. If you have any
mites, mites love hot, dry, dusty conditions. Okay. So knowing that, try to keep things not hot, not dry, not dusty. Okay.
Ooh.
In whatever way that takes without putting yourself into a moldy situation. Get your humidity at a good level and, you know, keep the dust down and stuff.
Dusty.
Like that.
I'd never heard that before.
They love the dust and they love the smoke. Oh boy, when we had the fires, oh God, those acidic air. Oh, it's horrible.
Wow.
But they loved it. Oh, they were horrible. We had some terrible fires here. I couldn't get into the nursery for like a month, so we could only go in like every few days and try to water quick and get out. You could hardly breathe. The smoke was so bad from the surrounding fires. And we kept it alive. But when we finally were able to really go back, oh my God, the spider mite and thrip infestation. I was devastated. Took a while to get through that, but we did because we have good cultural practices as a general rule. The other thing you want to never forget, if you're the kind of person who likes to mix it up and, you know, spray sometimes with this and sometimes with that, you don't ever want to spray or use a sulfur within 30 days of any oils, any botanical oils, you know, whatever it may be. Sulfurs and oils do not mix, so they have to be 30 days apart before or after. So keep that in mind if you are tempted to use the horticultural oils or plant-based oils, you know, neem, garlic, mint, rosemary, what have you. They smell fabulous, just like Christmas. But don't use them anywhere near your sulfurs within 30 days.
Wow.
They will just cause terrible nastiness. Your plant will not like you anymore.
Great advice.
And you also don't want to use sulfurs anywhere where your temperatures are going to go above 90 degrees. And out where I live, that's most of the summer. So they're not really the best solution in really hot areas.
They'll burn up under too much light or too much heat, right? If there's sulfur on it.
Yeah. I know they have those like sulfur burners for indoor grows, but geez, it's like, I'm not a fan. Let's put it that way. You don't want to go in that room. Ugh. So you know what I'm talking about.
Okay. I love it. This is
they've got their limitations. And like I say, that's the other reason I keep preaching Dr. Symes, because it has so few limitations. You can literally bathe in it, I'm telling you.
Man.
But anyway, there are alternate solutions, but yeah.
Listen, this has been a fantastic interview. If I can pump you up a little bit, I've been doing this show for years and years and years, and this is really one of the strongest interviews I've ever done. You just seem very knowledgeable, and you're knowledgeable on all the subjects that are blowing up right now, if I can just be candid.
Oh, darling man, I've been listening to your podcast, admiring you as well.
Thanks, I appreciate that. But you know what I'm saying, right? Like, there's kind of a whole push right now. Does this not excite you?
I'm thanking God. I mean, I know that sounds silly, but really, it's not a moment too soon, because the toxic practices are not doing any of us any favors. And I have to teach people there is another way. You don't have to grab for all the high numbers. You have to do gardening smarter, not harder. You know, all these little things, actually less is
so
more.
So true. Love it. Love it. Okay. So yes, follow Dr. Symes on Instagram at the amazing Dr. Symes, all spelled out, DOCTOR. And that about wraps it up. Mary Beth, thank you so much. This was really fantastic. Sweet. Thank you for taking the time.
Hey, thank you too, Jordan. You were great. I appreciate it.
Of course.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Anytime. No, I would love to have you back too. So,
Hey, if you want to put out, I have an Instagram for my IPM, and it's just the initials MBSIPM, as in Mary Beth Sanchez, Integrated Pest Management.
Nice.
MBSIPM on Instagram. If you just want to see little pictures and have little questions answered, that's anytime.
Fantastic.
That's my one social media.
My listeners will follow at MBSIPM, everybody. Follow the show at Growcast. Follow me at Jordan River IG. And we'll see you next time, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. This is Mary Beth Sanchez and Jordan River signing off, saying be safe and grow smarter.
Bye-bye, Jordan.